All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. I want to go directly to the phone line. Sam, who do we have on the line?
We have Eric from Tosa calling in.
Hey, Eric, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hey, Earl, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine, man. It's good to hear from you.
Good, good. Hey, I wanted to ask a quick question just off topic real quickly. Are you familiar, I'm sure you are, with Detroit Lions players Mel Farr and Lem Barney?
Absolutely, man. How could I not be?
Now, my question is, do you know how they are directly connected to your show?
Huh?
No, man. How?
I didn't think so. Okay, here it is. Now, you open your show every time, even back in the old days,
with
Marvin
Gaye.
What's going on, right?
Yeah. Right.
They are the voices hanging out with Marvin Gaye in the beginning, sang backup vocals on that song.
Really?
Huh.
They sang backup vocals on that song. They're friends in Detroit.
Mel Farr.
Wow, and Lem Barney, man.
Wow.
Wow,
yep,
man.
They're buddies of his, and they agreed to sing on there because he tried out for the Lions, I believe, and they kind of traded off.
Like, yeah,
try
yeah,
out
yeah.
We'll,
he was
we'll
an
sing,
athlete.
Or vice versa.
Yeah, you're right, man.
Yep.
Hey, that's some great information, man.
Yeah, just some crazy trivia. Being a Lions fan, I can't help but know that.
Hey, you know what, man? I've been a Lions fan all my life, going back to Milt Plum and Dick Nightrain Lane.
So Mel Farr, was he a D-back?
He was a D-back.
Yeah.
Mel Farr, no, running back. Mel Farr was a
star. Yeah. Mel, no, are you sure?
I thought it was Lem Barney.
He was a running back.
And Barney was
the D-back.
Lem Barney was a Hall of Fame cornerback.
Yeah, he was a cornerback. He's right. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, you
So
that's some great trivia. Go ahead.
Yes, so let me tell you, as what you're talking about earlier, Gary's talking, and I'm kind of in the same situation, Gary, although I think completely differently as a result. Moving in with family because he has too much pride to accept welfare, or his mother did, is welfare. That's a form of welfare. You move in with your family. There's a sense of pride in that, too. But nonetheless, that was just something. We did the same thing. I moved in with grandparents. But, again, the opportunities afforded white folks all the way down the line that aren't to others is what deludes white people into thinking, why doesn't everyone else do this? So, real quickly, and I like to say, if white people don't understand why people that don't look like them don't do as well as themselves, is that ignorance willful? Because it is truly ignorance, not fact. And like Gary and others, I'm not picking on Gary, I promise you, but most white folks have taught themselves to really accept their lot and let our centuries-old ongoing white supremacist doctrine kind of take care of the rest, with the only guarantee really being that they'll never fall to the level of black people in this country. And that's really what they cling to.
Hey, man, listen, I can't I have to say to you, man, in all candor, You are really, and I've always loved you and what you've always added to any program that I've been on. You've been very truthful, and you're that now. Sandy, you want to respond?
Well, no, you're right. I mean, I think the problem is people only know what they know, and we don't have, I don't think we teach ourselves enough in our society about empathy and projection, trying to figure out the situation of other people have. So if all we do is project the experience we've had personally, it permits us to do exactly what you've said, which is to be in denial about the problems that might beset other folks as a function of their birth. And, you know, that's what I hope the politics turns around and becomes in the next while, which is just evaluating how America provides the same birthright to everybody in this country when they're born, and evaluates how we are not doing that right now, and figures out the difference between those two, and how do we get to the point of everyone's having the same birthright, or as close to it as possible. Obviously, we all can't be born Elon Musk's son.
Right.
Of course, if we... that's not necessarily great because you'd have a name no one could pronounce. But you know, we can't all have an equal kind of a notion of exactly what we step into, but we can all have a birthright that gives us essentially equal opportunity.
You know, but for every Sandy, and I'm sorry, I forgot caller's name.
Eric.
And
Eric?
For every Sandy and Eric who are willing to have an honest discussion on this, there's so many who are not, and who will be angered by the conversation, and I've never understood why they get angered by the conversation. And if I was to say what Sandy and what Eric just said, I would be vilified,
threatened.
Yes.
Well, I think, you know, anger is related to fear. And in fact, they're almost directly related, and you almost can't have anger without fear. And so it relates to social fears. And it's a fear, maybe it's a fear driven by a subconscious knowledge that it's true and it's been, you know, you're in denial about it. Or it's a subconscious fear that somehow, you know, we have privilege, we white have privilege that we will lose, and that privilege is somehow important to our status, and that we might, and I think that has a lot to do with it. It's a reactionary concern.
And if I can
concern.
Add, Sandy,
yeah,
what you just said?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What you just said about that privilege, I believe that from my perspective, we're also raised and conditioned to be willfully ignorant and to not believe that the troubles of other people are even important enough for us to worry about. And in that sense, we get to a point where right now what you're talking about, that privilege and that fear of falling below to the level of those people you always fear falling to, is what is making this current thing, this current movement, more important than actually democracy for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I've said this before, and you kind of step back and said it's a little bit, you know, flaming, so to speak, like, you know, saying that, and you know, but truly, these folks are deciding, making the decision that they will roll with this movement, take the democracy down. It's more important that I remain where I'm at.
Well, I think
for the whole country.
It's because their version of democracy, the version of democracy they're thinking of, and when they talk about founding fathers with a Judeo-Christian heritage, is a dog whistle for describing a democracy in which the culture that they are all used to, this white culture, is the prevalent culture that prevails in the country, regardless of what.
And that privileges them.
And yeah, which also secures an ongoing privilege. And, you know, it's a status
thank
quo.
You.
It's a status quo that
thank
they,
you very much for the call, yeah, Eric. Really appreciate it.
It's a status quo that people want to hang on to, even though that status quo is obviously in the process of evolving. There's no doubting the fact that, I mean, the critical race theory furor is all about the unwillingness of people. It's like people whose spouse says, let's go to family counseling, and they say, no, we don't have any problems.
Right.
We're not going to go to family counseling. And they know that the reason they really don't want to go is because all the problems they have will be revealed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's pretty much what I think the furor of critical race theory is all about, is if we really roll up our sleeves and look at the world that realistically. Now, you know, the fact that we chose, or there was a decision made to call it critical race theory, it belies really what is being talked about, because that was a name of a course in a law school that was evaluating something from a totally different perspective than what was being taught or is being taught in grade school and high school curricula, which is simply to talk about the fact that plantations, this source of wealth for the South, were made, the wealth was created by slavery. And to attach those two, so that to say that Southern wealth was built off the backs of slaves, which is 100%
right.
True. And that is not to be taught because it somehow reflects badly on the circumstance, even though it's history.
You know, Sandy, my concern about it all is I watched my dad, didn't know my granddads, never got to see either of them, but my dad, through his entire life, worked hard, did all the things that he could, never committed any crimes that I'm aware of, you know, showed me how to be a provider, and that's what he did his entire life. He was a provider and was there. And so when you see in many men like him, and through their entire lives, they were never able to get beyond that. They were always looked at in a manner as not quite good enough, and only because of the color of their skins. And that's the way this nation had it. through his entire life. And here I am now in the latter stages of my life. And a lot of that still exists today. And then I look at my sons and say, well, listen, how long do we have to continue to deal with that in this country before at some point in time people are going to say enough already, right? I mean, you can't be a great nation, I don't care how you say it, if you aren't treating people equitably and fairly inside of your nation. I don't care about all the rest of that. But if people aren't all being treated fairly in your nation, you're not a great nation. I'm just, you know.
Well, you know, and we...
Especially to the people who are on the other side of that.
And, you know, the rest of the world looks at this.
Yes, the rest of the world knows that.
Looks at the incarceration rate we have in the United States and looks at what is public about the way the United States is divided and its wealth is divided. And then we run around the world telling people...
Yes.
How they should govern themselves. We tell China, you know, with China's got problems in their governance. Well, you know, China's trending in many good directions. They've got problems. They've got government is a messy process, whether it's democracy or whatever is installed. And you know, there are some good homilies about the fact that democracy is the worst, is the best of three bad options, essentially, in terms of what kind of government you could install.
Senator, we got to go to break. We'll be right back. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Erling Group Show. Sandy Williams is here. We'll be right back.